I will, let me not write everything and then summarize. I will start the summary while I write. So I'll still write the summary, but let's, we will not do as much today as we normally do, because the summary, I want to write it down. But I think it's useful nonetheless. So here is the Gaussian model. We say that we have a lattice, and at each spin, we weight a real spin from minus to plus infinity with a Gaussian. And then there is an interaction between spin I and spin j. This is automatically a partition function of a model of sticks, where I sum over sticks, and there is some simple way saying the sticks are indistinguishable that comes from just expanding the exponential. And then there is some simple weight that we interpret as recombining the endpoints of sticks when they meet. That's beautiful, and that allows us to interpret the result as some paths, because these sticks then can be interpreted as configurations of paths. Okay? So this is the measure. It's special for the Gaussian model. And this was the definition of our weight associated to having SI spins at position NI. And this is what this way is. Also, let's put an index Gaussian for the Gaussian model. Okay? Then we could write that this is just exponential of a bunch of independent closed loops. And moreover, we could do more even, which is we could compute this. We could compute explicitly how many loops there are, which are closed, right? We did it several times in many ways. Do the sum. This is something geometric. This is some Fourier transform something to the power L. You just do this geometric sum, and you get this log. So we can not only have a duality between Gaussian model and loops, that we could do, but we can do more. We can compute this sum over loops, and we can compute a partition function of the Gaussian model. Right? And we did it in many ways, in Fourier, through paths, we did it in many, many ways. Now, let's see. So now we have the ON model. So the ON model, instead of writing, let me emphasize what's different. It's basically the same. What are the key differences? S now is a vector, S. V mu now is just integration over that vector S with a constraint that S square is a constant, and in particular, we choose this nice normalization where it's equal to n. And furthermore, the last difference, instead of Si times Sj, product of two numbers, we have dot product of two vectors, Si and Sj. So that's basically the same difference, this model. And by the way, since we are in this spirit, let's write here what would be the Ising model. The Ising model would be the same, right? Would be the same. By same, I mean the same as Gaussian model. But d mu now would be 1/2 delta s is equal to 1 plus 1/2 delta s equal to minus 1, right? So that would be the measure of integration. Instead of a Gaussian, or instead a vector, then the vector will be just plus or minus 1. That will be the Ising model. Then here, we said that this is equal to a sum over sticks, right, of the same thing with Mn of the Gaussian model. The weight now changed to Mn of the On model. Okay, not to confuse these Ns. Right, Oni, Oni. It would go from the Gaussian to the On model. And then we saw something nice. We saw that this weight for the Gaussian model is equal to this. Right? Remember, let's write here that the weight here for the Ising model, the weight Ni, which is expectation value of S to the Ni. If Ni is even, this is 1. If Ni is odd, it's a sum of an odd function. So this is just 1 times delta Ni even. Right? Here, the weight is Ni minus 1 double factorial. There, it's 1. And here, it was none of those. Here, this M Ni was 1. If Ni is 0, of course, it was also 1 if Ni is equal to 2. but it was zero otherwise. And here, sorry, let me be more careful. Here, I'm taking a funny limit where n goes to zero. That is, we compute these weights as a function of on, of the n model, but then when we take n to zero, we see something very interesting, which is that when we have more than two spins, the expectation value was zero, was vanishing with n. Right? And therefore, this means that this sum is equal to, if you want, the exponential of t over 2 times sum over, 1 over 1 half, sum t to the L, number of closed loops, again, of the self-avoiding walk type, where they cannot self-intersect, because there cannot be four spins. So things like this are allowed, so this is good, but things where they would cross like this, for example, this is forbidden because here we have four spins, we have more than two spins. More precisely, if you remember, what happens is that whenever we have a step, right, whenever we have a step, there was a delta AB enforcing the colors to be the same. So whenever we have a loop, the loop can be white or blue or dashed of any color, of any of the n colors. So whenever there is a loop, it comes with a degeneracy factor, which is small n, how many colors there are. So if I write really the number of loops, I should put a factor of n here. And because n is small, this is 1 plus n times sum over the number of loops, t to the L, number of paths. So in this case, there is no particular difference, plus order n squared, right? If I exponential or not exponential, it's the same thing because n is small, right? Number of loops of length L of the self-avoiding walk. Also very interesting that, also interesting was the statement that and this quantity here, now, this quantity here in the exponent, we could say is the free energy of the self-avoiding walk. In the same way that this would be the free energy of the random walk, the usual random walk. And so an obvious question here that we can ask is, what is the free energy of the self-avoiding walk? One thing is to establish a duality, another thing is to study the model. Now that we know that we want to study random walks that don't intersect, let's study them. What is it, right? What is the sum of all these paths? So this guy, it would be relevant by itself as a statistical mechanical problem. This would be what we should do if we want to study, say, polymers, which are given by a bunch of loops that cannot self-intersect because they are polymers. So I cannot put a polymer on top of each other. So then this would be the kind of thing that would show up if I want to study the physics of closed polymers. So one thing is the duality. So we established in this way a duality. That's nice. Equally nice is to solve this model or that model. So we, in particular, to ask what's this free energy of random walks. Here we could do it. Not only we have a duality, right? We have a duality and we also have a solution, right? So here we have our duality, but we also have the solution, right? And here for now, we are not in the same stage. We wrote the duality, we did not write what the free energy of the random walks is yet. Okay? And studying this random walk, this is the purpose of next week. Sorry, what was the question?
When we take the limit n going to 0, then the partition function is just...
Yeah, the partition function is 1. So if you want to define this free energy, how would you do? You would say it's the limit when n goes to 0 of partition function minus 1 divided by n. Right? Then you really have a sharp expression, right? So this object, if you want a duality, a sharp duality, it says that this object is equal to the limit when n goes to 0 of the partition function that depends on n, minus 1 divided by n. It's a sharp equation. I compute this function for any n, I subtract 1, divide by n, take the limits. Right? So that's how mathematically I would write a formula, a rigorous formula. Any other questions? Let me mention that going from these partition functions to correlation function was simple, because the only thing we do when we go to correlation function is explicitly put the spins that we want to compute, say the two-point function. And so it's like we have two extra impurities. And so these impurities are a bit different because now we want odd number of sticks going there. And so when we add now a correlation function of spin at position A, spin at position A plus R, then this was given by the sum of all possible paths between A and A plus some separation R, right? In other words, in equation, it's sum over L, T to the L times number of paths of length L that go from A to A plus R. And this we could compute, and this was, so this is a duality between here we have spins and there we have random walks. Right? And not only we could compute this, but we could, not only we have this duality, again, this is duality. That's nice. And this is solution. And the solution was that this result was just given by some universal propagator at large distances. And similarly here, we also established a duality, and we saw that here, what you should do is you take spin at position A, spin at position A plus R, right? But now you have to say the component, and here we say we put one component, A, and here we can put the same, because if it's not equal, it's zero. And by this expression here, there is no sum. No sum over A. I just fix A, for example, 1. So, right? A is equal to 1, for example. And then we saw that we start and end there, and we get that this is the sum of T to the L, NL, number of paths that go from A, that start at the origin, say, and go a distance R. Doesn't matter what A is, of course, right? And but these paths are self-avoiding walks, right? I should sum over paths, but in my path, this is forbidden, right? So I don't allow for such things where the points pass by the same point, right? And here is just the usual random walk. And again, of course, this would be what we would call the propagation, the propagator in the self-avoiding walk. And of course, you could ask, what is this quantity? What can we tell about it? And I would say the same thing. This is what we are going to do next week. So there are two nice things here. One is duality. Duality, we saw it already. We understood it this morning. That's this. And the other is the statistical properties of the random walks that we are not yet seeing. But it's really two independent things. Okay, so that's the summary, and now we would like to go to the Ising model. So we have already random walks, self-avoiding walks, and now we are going to go to the promised walks of the Ising model, right? Okay. But any question here so far concerning the logic or anything? Is it clear? Yeah? Good. Notice that the self-avoiding walks look much harder than the previous ones. Why were the previous ones so easy? Because at each step, I just do a step, random step. I don't care about my past. And these walks, you see, you are at step 1 million, and you care if at step 500 you already passed by this point. So it's not like I just say, oh, at each step, I do something local. No, I have to do something local and look behind and see what is happening right now, right? So it looks like a harder problem. I cannot just say, if I know where I am at step n plus 1, in terms of where I am at step n, it's not as simple as that, right? So at step n plus 1, I definitely cannot go to where I was at step n, but can I go there? depends if the path is already passed by there. No, so it doesn't depend just on where I came from, right? It's easy to say don't come back in the opposite direction, but which one can you go depends on where you were already. So it's indeed more challenging. That's why we are leaving it for the next week, for the last week. But now we could study this problem here, where the weight is equal to 1. Moreover, we are going to use this identity, remember, e to the it, si, sj, that this is equal to some constant, n times 1 plus v, si, sj. This is a true identity here. Yes?
So what happens in a self-avoiding quark if I are in a situation where I can't make another step without self-intersecting? Or does the work stop there then? Or?
No, there's a difference, because what do I need in this walk is how many walks there are that connect this point and this point.
Okay, so it's not a valid walk.
Yeah, so okay. That's not a question I would ask.
Okay.
So what you are catching is about the growth. So here we are saying it's statistics of how many paths there are that go from this point to this point.
Okay.
Another question is, on average, if I was growing, how many times do I get traps? It's okay. A different type of question. Like in the usual random walk, for example. Other questions we could have asked is, for example, on average, how much time does it take to go back to the origin? We never asked this question, for example. We asked how much time on average we spend on the origin. We did not ask, on average, what's the first time that I passed by the origin. Actually, I was trying to do this computation by head yesterday when I was walking randomly with my daughter. we started at 6 p.m. and we decided we'll go random. And then whenever we reach a corner, we do odd or even and we decide randomly where to turn. And if we both get the same number, we go straight. And so we went a few times. We took some pictures at the border of Waterloo and so on. And then I was trying to calculate how long it will take to come back to the origin, but I couldn't do it by head. No, okay. I have to sit. Okay, anyway.
But you're here, right? So you came back to the origin eventually.
We did random, and after 2 hours, we did like this. Yeah. It was one of those Levy random walks. Big stuff. Okay. Now here, you see that I remind you that in the Ising model, we have a luxury. That is, because this only takes 2 values, there is such identity, which I interpret as 0 sticks or 1 stick. So here, we never have 2 sticks. We never have the square, the cube, and so on. We never have these multiple sticks. Right? So here, it means that this is equal to empty plus 1 stick. Right? So it's either empty, which is the 1, or 2 sticks, which is the V. I remind you that V is tangent of J, which now we are calling T. Okay. And therefore, because we never put 2 sticks, So this thing, for example, these 2 sticks, is not there. Huh? This is just not there. Okay, so that's one comment. This is not there. Neither is, for example, this configuration. For example, it's another configuration. It's more complicated, of course. If that's not there, this is also not there. So in the partition function, we have the same thing as here, right? But now, this nij can only be 0 or 1, and this factor is not here. It's either 0 or 1, right? We don't have this factor. And this guy is always 1. So what is z, right? The weight is always 1. It's a sum of sticks. The weight is just V to the number of sticks we are calling R. It's just V to the R. But then the weight is always just 1. So that's our model. So we just have to specify what do we mean by this sum over sticks. We just have to remind ourselves that the sum over sticks are any configuration where there are no open ends and one stick at most per site. So let's write a few examples. So one example of a configuration that does exist is this, for example, like the eighth shape. That's a configuration. Another one would be just a rectangle here. Right? This is another example. Okay, for example, right? This is one configuration. So we sum over all such configurations, and then we have one. Where by this one, we mean it's one, there should be no open ends, right? And one or zero sticks per link. Then we count how many sticks there are, and we put the weight V to the R. Right? So that's the weight. So the weight is even simpler than there. Right? So this is what replaces this expression here. Now, not getting this is okay because we also don't have two sticks at the same position. So we don't need to worry about distinguishable or indistinguishable because there's only one. So fine, that's not a big deal. But we don't get these three combinations, and sometimes we can have four spins passing by. Right? And so the question is, how do we interpret these as paths? I would like to write, how can we do this? We would like to say that this is exponential of, again, the same business, sum V to the L, perhaps over 2 because of orientation, and then some number of some type of closed paths of length L, right, with some extra prescription, right? It's not going to be random walk, it's not going to be self-avoiding walk, it's going to be something else. And that's exactly what we want to work out, right?
Why can't it be those two, random walks and self-avoiding walks?
Can you tell me, sorry?
Why can't it be these two? You cancel them out. You said they can't be random or self-avoiding walks.
Because, for example, this configuration comes with weight 1.
Yeah.
We know that for the random walks, it comes with weight 3, because there are these three possibilities of recombining this walk. I mean, this model, this one, is not that weight. That is the random walk. So I cannot have two things being the same thing, right? If they are different. Right? So it doesn't have the right combinatorics for recombinations to be just sum over walks. Okay? So let's see. So let's see a few hints of what the solution is. I already told you what the solution is, but let's see a few hints, imagining I did not tell you before. One hint is this. So here we have weight 1. Versus 3 that we were getting before. So remember, before we got this 3, and we were happy with the 3, because the 3 was saying that this configuration of sticks has more than one interpretation in terms of paths. It can be this path, it can be this path, or it can even be two disconnected paths. And because it could be these three things, it's good that it comes with a factor of 3. So we were happy that this configuration gave a factor of 3. Now let's see one more hint from a graph that is not there, but that was before in the random walk case, which is, for example, that before we had this configuration that now we are saying is not here, right? Right? We had this configuration, right? And if I sum over walks, this is an example where I have a walk. And you see, it's true that here I would never put this because I have two sticks. But if I'm doing something local, right, I'm blind, it's easy to say I go one step, I don't go back. That's okay. That's one way of avoiding this boring double sticks. Just go and come back. But then I walk randomly, and then at some point I pass by where I already passed. It's hard to tell. Like here, I did this huge walk, and then I passed by. I don't remember that I already passed by here, right? So it would be hard to exclude this in a local way, right? So this, before, what weight was it giving? Remember, do you remember today, this morning, what weight this was giving? Sorry? 9 halves was the full thing? Ah, yes, that's right. This was giving 9 halves, good. right? And this was many paths, right? So in particular, yeah, so this was giving this 9 halves. Okay, so we would like to go from this number, for example, to 1, and this configuration is simply not there. So this we would like to go to 0. Okay, so let's see how could we go to 0. So that's an example of a path, and also this path, right, this was giving 1 half, and we wanted to give 0 as well. So these are the kind of things that we want. We want this 3 to become 1, we want this 9 halves to become 0, and we want this 1 half to become 0. Okay? So let's make the 1 half become 0. The 1 half becomes 0, it's very easy. This 1 half becomes 0, we just specify the rule of our walk is a walk when we give a step, we don't come back. That's a very local rule. So here, I already start specifying something about my walks. I want to say that when I go up, if I go to the right, then left is forbidden. Right? So I cannot do this and then come back. Because there are never 2 sticks on top of each other. This excludes some configuration of 2 sticks, but not all. It doesn't exclude this one. Because this one, I'm not going and coming back. I'm going, doing some things, and then passing by later. Right? So this excludes those trivial configurations, but doesn't solve this problem yet. Do you agree? Now, let's see if it solves this problem or not. Remember that this 9 halves was a sum of a few things. This 9 halves was a sum of this disconnected contribution. And that indeed, this solves, because I remove this configuration, so I'm good. So this I kill. It was also a sum of configurations like this, where I go, I come back, and then disconnected. This I also solve by this prescription. I cannot go and come back. But then there were the paths like this, that I go around and I come back, disconnected paths like this. Right? And now here, it looks like this. I remind you that this, and then there was the connected, right? And in the connected, I had these 4 options, each giving 1 half. So I had these 4 halves here, right? And the 4 options was orientation plus, 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 minus, 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 plus. And so these guys we already set to 0 by that simple rule, but we still need to set these 4 halves to 0. So we need to set this 3 to 1 and this 4 halves to 0. Okay? So if you forgot what I said the solution is, only if you forgot, can you try to guess what the solution would be? But don't cheat, yeah. Only if you forgot what I told you before. Did someone forget? Or everyone has a very good memory? Okay. So let's just see that it works what I said before. And the idea is, let's try to weight these paths with plus and minus signs depending on orientation. And this is indeed a good hint, because remember, here we had orientation plus plus or plus minus. So if I weight the paths related to the winding of my path, I have a chance that this 4 could become 2 minus 2, and this 3 could become 2 minus 1. So the idea is to transform this 3 into a 2 minus 1, and this 4 into 2 minus 2. Okay? So that's the goal, to try to do this. And we are going to achieve this by saying that winding matters. So let's see how this works. So the proposal is the following. So first of all, what is winding? When I have a path like this, we say that here I take my tangent vector, right? And now I imagine that I take my tangent vector, I put a dot here, and I keep rotating my tangent vector and seeing the picture that my endpoint does. And there is winding if at the end my end point draws a circle, and no winding if it unwinds. So this, for example, I go like this, right? And then I go like this, like this, like this, like this, like this, and at the end, I drew a circle. So there was winding one, right? This path winds one, right? So if I imagine that this is an endpoint and it has a string, the endpoint draws a circle, then I connect, I cannot unwind it if there is a rock in the middle. You see? Whereas, so this, right, I follow my vector, right? And if I were to follow my vector to put the, all the starting points at the same position, I start with some vector, and then my vector changes from here to here, then to here. And at the end, my unit vector did a 2 pi winding. And so we say that winding is equal to plus 1. And if it was minus 2 pi, we would say winding is minus 1. Now, another example would be a path that does something like this. Where now you see that if you follow a vector, you go like this, you start rotating, but soon you change your mind and you rotate back, such that at the end, if you put all in the same direction, you start here and you are going to change, but then you change your mind. And at the end, right, if I take a hole here, this is topologically trivial. I can just unwind completely, right? So if I put a hole here, and then I connect the endpoints, I have a winding one. If I put a hole here, I can untwist this, right? So there is no total winding, right? I don't wind as I go around. Okay, so here we would say that we have zero winding. Right? The winding would know about orientation. This is winding going in this direction. If the orientation is reversed, let's put if in a different color. If the orientation was the opposite, the winding would be minus one. Okay, but then we have a proposal for what we could do. We could say that this path, like this, right? You see that this path has winding, plus one or minus one, right? So this has winding equal to plus minus one. Which sign? Well, it depends. If it's this is plus, if it's this, it's minus, right? But it has winding, it goes around. But this path, right? If I start here winding in one direction, then I wind in the opposite direction. So this is winding equal to zero. And this path, well, one has winding, this has winding plus minus one, and this has winding plus minus one. Okay, so a nice candidate is to say that each path, let's say that each path, I want a minus sign here. So let's say that to each path, we add a factor minus one to the weight plus one. Such that if the winding is one or minus one, like the simplest paths, the weight is one. But if the winding is zero, the weight is minus one. You see? Now, these paths become one, minus one, one. And so when I add them all up, I get one. Do you agree? Let's see another example. Let's see this example now, the four halves. Right? Now the four halves, we have the following. We have this option, where we say that we do this. This has total winding one. I just go around. So this has windings. There is another path, which is exactly the same going down. But now there are also these other two paths, right? where I go here with one orientation and I come back. So I go like this and then like this. Right? And this will therefore have zero winding. So winding one, winding minus one, winding zero, and there is another one here with winding zero as well. And there are four options. This one is just this one with flipped orientation. Right? And therefore, we would conclude that we would get plus one, minus one, minus one, and in total we get zero. Then we add them up. And you see that this is always true, because whenever I have two lines parallel that disconnect one path here and one path there, if there is some winding, the winding will be the opposite if I reverse these two lines. And so the configuration where I connect the lines like this, or when I flip them, now they will differ by a minus sign, and therefore they will cancel. So this trick automatically projects not only this trivial example, but it projects anything where I have whatever here and whatever here. It has some winding here. That winding changes, the total winding changes when I reconnect these lines in a different way. And so therefore, adding up these paths with minus one to the winding will be equal to zero. And I will project this out. And that's crucial because in the stick picture, the sticks are always one or zero. This path is not there, like we said. Okay? And so that's the punchline. So this is the key observation, is that if we weight the paths by minus one to the winding plus one, then it is correct. So in fact, so let me just finish here. We can say that we sum over walks. Let's call them winding walks. But by this winding walks, I mean nothing really. So I mean they don't come back right away, right? Let's just say that this is the definition of winding. No immediate comeback. So it's almost a very trivial. No immediate turn back. That we do in post, that I don't go and come back right away. But otherwise, it's just usual walks. But the thing is, we also put the weight minus one times the winding of... No, this way doesn't work. So if I put winding, no immediate turn back and weight with winding the paths. Okay, in other words, we write this as exponential of sum over all closed paths. Now I sum over paths, I don't sum over L. I sum over paths. The weight is V to the L over 2, but also minus 1 to the winding of the path plus 1. Right? That's what it means, that this NL winding is this definition. So what we want to do is something very minor. Sum over paths, go, count the paths, but put a minus 1 to the winding over a path here for the Ising model. Yes?
So how did we deal with the case that we have two separate loops? Did we add their winding number?
When they are just separate?
Yeah, like the third case.
Here?
Yeah.
We just multiply, right? It's just this times this, right?
But that's not...
That's perfectly compatible with having this. I just have an independent loop. When I bring down, it's just the product of the two independent loops.
Yeah, and that sum is over connected.
This sum is over a single loop. It's exponential of the connected single loop.
Okay.
Right? So here, in this, like after I exponentiate, it's single loop. If I bring it down, it's a gas of closed loops. If I expand down the exponent. But in the exponent, it's a single loop. So it's a gas of independent polymers, where winding matters.
Well, then in that case, why did we not get two factors of one and get an overall weight of two?
Two factors like this?
Yeah. Would each of the loops have weight one?
That's right.
Then the sum of all of this, wouldn't that be two?
So one minus one plus one is one.
Wait,
So let's recap. So I'm trying to check the partition function. The partition function, the claim is that we want to say that the partition function I sum over all possible loops with the weight one or multiple, with the prescription that each loop comes multiplied by minus one to the winding plus one. So then it means go to what we did in the morning for the usual Gaussian model and just put extra minus signs whenever you have winding zero or even. Whenever the winding is even, put a minus sign. So then it is just we go to the case we had in the morning, this three, and we replace it by one. Then there is a next step, which is recognize the sum of loops as exponential of a single loop. Though that step, it also works, because what did that step tell us? It told us that when I have two squares, I expand from the exponent, I get 1 over 2 factorial, but then there was this business that I could put it here, or I could put it in the opposite, and that gives an extra factor of 2, and that's why it should come with weight 1. Does it answer your question? Yeah. Yes?
I was just wondering, so this winding thing, this is not a local... So like if you imagine like you're on the walk, this is something you'd still need to know the whole...
Excellent question, right? That's a very natural objection. This winding still looks like something a bit non-local. I need to look at the full path, right? What's your name?
Jeremy.
As Jeremy is saying. So the beauty is that winding is local. And that's very non-trivial. It doesn't look true. But the beauty is that winding is local. So if you are kidnapped and you have your eyes folded and you just feel what you are doing, you can tell how much what the winding is, okay? So the winding is 1/4 of the number of left steps minus the number of right steps. Okay, so that's the key observation. Okay, so let's check. When I have a square like this, I go left, 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 and indeed, so this has winding equal to 1. When you go down, right, you have right, 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 and you would have winding equal to minus 1. I have right at each step. And in the previous case, sorry, let me just finish. And in the previous case, we say we have, let's put left with circles and right with squares. So circle, 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 and then right, right, right. And so winding equal to 0. But in the other one, where we did this, let's put again circles and squares. Left, if we go like this, left, 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 and then right, right, we go here, we turn right, and then left, 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 and then right, and so winding equal to plus 1. Right, I 6 minus 2 is 4, divided by 4 is 1.
What do you mean by local in this case? Because like you need to know the full amount of steps, right, of the whole path to make this calculation. So what do you mean by local?
I mean that if I know what is the total number of left and right steps up to n small n steps, I do one more step and I just count whether I turn left or right. I don't need to know my full story.
You need to know the path.
You don't need to know the path. You just count. You just see. Turn, 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 turn. You are kidnapped, right? You have your eyes folded. Someone turns left, click. And then you turn right, click. And you just count how many times you turn left and right, and you can tell if you did winding or not. So it's local. You don't need to remember everything. You just... locally, whenever you turn right, you measure. And whenever you turn left, you measure, right?
So it's local in the sense that it only depends on the corners, on the curves that you do, the left or right.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it local. Something local is something that you measure like only like around a certain point.
The Lagrangian, is the action, is it local? In that sense, it's something that you need to know information. Of course, you need to know all the points, but it's a bunch of local things. It's an integral of some local action.
All right.
It's the same thing. Yes?
How do you get the factor 104? Like, what if you have a bigger square? You
okay, let's have a bigger square. Then if I have a bigger square. What's the joke? And then I still turn. 1, 2, 3.
No, like, what I meant is like, you have 8 steps in total.
That's it.
No, I'm saying
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Oh. Or did you mean that you go around twice?
No.
You go around twice, it works, because then 8, 0, right?
But
if you go around twice, then you have winding 2.
Okay.
It's still kind of not local in the sense that you have to know when you complete.
Yeah, when you...
That's true. That is true. You need, if you have a closed path...
Yeah, you still have
so to... So if you have a closed path, the prescription is, you have a closed path, now drop someone at any point of the path, and tell that person, just go and measure how many times you turn left and turn right.
Okay.
So it's local in that sense, right? You just drop and say, there you go. Bleep, bleep, bloop, bloop, bleep, bleep, bloop, bloop. And you just count. And then when you come, when you go to the end, you know the winding of the path. Right? Yeah.
Why are we even talking about the paths being local? I mean, self-avoiding, that characteristic is non-local in nature, and we didn't really care about that. I mean, how does it even matter?
Well, if you, this is just a sentence, right? This is a formula. So this sentence is only meaningful if we use it for something, right? So the question is, how am I going to use this sentence? The meaning of the formula is hopefully clear, right? It's not ambiguous, up to philosophies. But what we want, what I mean by local, is the same thing of the random walk. In the random walk, if I knew what happens up to step N, I can do one more step, and then all I have to do is make sure that I close the path. So the story only knows about the last step, if I want to count things. I'm saying that here it will be the same thing. At each, I will just do a random walk, and at each step, I just need to make sure that I count if I turn left or right, and then I need to make sure that I close the path. So from that point of view, I'm in as good situation as I was there. There, I just had to say, make sure that the path closes. And now I just say, make sure that the step that the path closes, and at each step, measure if you turn left or right, or you go straight. Because then if you just take that, if you measure that, at the end you will know the right winding. So that's what I mean by local. It's, does it?
Right, but to the extent that we need to be aware of the starting point, this is not Markovian fully.
No, it is Markovian. Why isn't it not Markovian? I mean, you mean that I want to ask what's the probability of going back to the origin?
I'll have to remember what my starting point.
That's right.
Not just my last step.
That's right. That's true. You will have to know. Let me see if I... Yeah, if we think of a closed path as an open path that then ends at the same position, I will need to keep track of a starting point and then the end point. And I will even need to be careful of how I reconnect things. Because at the very last step, if I reconnect like this is one thing, but if I reconnect like this, I need to make sure that I put the correct weight because it counts as a turn. So, yes. Let's be careful when we glue them together.
Right. So I'm just wondering if you could just equate local with Markovian, but then that is not the case.
Because of closing at the very end, you mean?
So
oh, okay.
The walks that we considered really.
Let me write. I don't think we will finish today, but tomorrow we will for sure. And when we write the, in what sense it's local, like I grow the path slowly, you can tell me whether it's Markovian or not.
Does this equation hold for higher dimensions? This is only 2.
No, here it's very much 2 dimensions. Yeah. Good point. Where did we start going to 2 dimensions? It was, when we start discussing this winding, we are in 2 dimensions. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. So the important point, yes, when we went to Ising, here it's still valid in any number of dimensions. But let's see that. Let's say that we are always discussing 2D Ising.
Just out of curiosity, is there, like relating this winding to this contractibility properties,
yeah.
Is there any progress that has been made for higher dimension by asking, instead of removing a point, maybe remove a whole line and measure?
Oh, of course, yeah. Those things in topology of winding and pi 3s, pi 1, pi 2, or whatever, homotopy, homology, of course, no. I mean,
but has that helped the problem or no?
No. Okay, good. So let me see. So how much time do we have? I don't know when we started exactly.
45 minutes.
Yeah, I'm not going to go to 45 minutes though. It's too late. So let's see. So we wrote the paths. Yeah, okay. Okay, but let's solve. I think we'll solve the Ising model completely today, I think. Okay. Are you tired? Can you do half an hour?
No, we had nothing the whole day. Only two classes and a tutorial.
Okay.
I think the problem is that we have a lot of homework for the subjects.
Okay, so then let me just... Because if I start now, yeah, I don't think. Yeah, 45, half an hour, I don't think I can solve the full model. Okay. So instead, maybe, no. Let me then set up the problem and we do the algebra much more carefully next time. But, so our goal, as we said, is to compute the free energy for these winding walks, right? For these winding walks. Which means 1/2 of the sum of length over L. And then for each L, we sum, we put some V to the L, and we sum over the closed paths of length L minus 1 to the winding of the path CL plus 1. That's what we want to do. So this is what we would call, this thing, is what we would call our NL. So we want to count paths, and let's draw a path here. So that's an example of a path. And what I want to do is, so let's think that we start here and we end here. So let's put an open end there. And then I want to say that I start at a given position, right? I start at a given position, and then I have the first step, and let the first step be vertical. So, now, later, what we are going to do is sum over all possible first steps, but now we say the first step is vertical. And then, we define the following. So we start with this path, vertical. We start vertical. I'm going to copy the loop here. But for example, stop here. I'm stopping here, right? So I'm at this position. And I could count first up to here. And I define the number of paths of length L that go from the origin, I call this origin, and I call these coordinates ij, so that go all the way to ij, right? And let me put a label to say, and that end at ij, that end at ij in direction beta. So beta is a direction. Okay, and we put here beta. And actually, I want to say that actually, I'm sorry, I don't want to say the first step is up. Sorry, I take it back. I want to say that the zeroth step is up. In other words, I will assume that at the end, I'm going to be coming from the vertical direction. And here, for example, in this picture, the last step, so here beta is equal to right. At this step, at the last step L, I came from the left, so I go right. And here, I assume that in the zero step, I came from the bottom. But I could come from all possible directions and I will have to sum over those. But for now, let's say that we came from this. In other words, if this is the number of paths, all I want to say, this is about boundary conditions, is that if I say if L is zero, I, J, beta, then at length zero, I am at the origin, I needs to be zero, J needs to be zero, and beta needs to be up by definition. Right? So because we are starting with this. If we start with the ones that start left or right or so on, I would put there delta beta right, delta beta left, delta beta whatever. That's just for boundary condition. And then these are the number of paths again that go all the way here, taking into account with winding. And now let's write what the strategy is. And then we decide how much we do. So what's the strategy now? So this is the hardest part we did was think about this object and have in mind that when you grow the path, be careful with putting factors that later will give you the right winding when you turn left and when you turn right. Okay? So now it's about implementing this. But you agree that we have the right ideas already. We have accounting, and we know how to grow the path a little bit from L to L plus 1. All we have to be careful is when we grow, do we put or not this factor that will then count the winding, right? So that's it. So that's the strategy. So let's summarize the strategy here. So now we have a clear stat. It's just a question of writing formulas carefully, but all the key ideas are there. And so now our strategy is first, we write a recursion relation that relates the number of steps of L plus 1 at I, J, and beta as some recursion relation that I know this guy, if I know what? If I know how many steps there are with one less step, and if I am at one less step, I end up at some I plus minus one, J plus minus one, and some beta prime. So if I know these guys at the neighbors, I know automatically how many steps there are here. Right? Now, this recursion relation relates, as I said, L, let's put L here and put L minus 1 here. So if I want to know Lij, I need to know L minus 1, the neighbors. Right? So many labels, right? I need to decrease L and explore all the neighbors. Right? So many variables. But then the second step, what is the second step in our problem? We are working here with these positions, but what should we do in any statistical mechanical problem like these lattices? What did we do in the Gaussian model, in the random walk, when we were working with positions? Yeah, we have translation invariance. So then we will introduce some Fourier objects, right? that will depend, instead of I and J, that will depend on some QX and QY, right? Where this recursion relation becomes diagonal. We solve it because it becomes a trivial recursion relation. So now we can solve this recursion relation. Right? And then, as a third step, we explicitly do the sum over L. And after doing that, we will end up with some integral. In this case, the momentum is two-dimensional. We will have solved this explicitly, and we will then produce a log of 1 minus some function f of q, exactly like we do in the Gaussian model. I don't know if I erased it already, I did, which was this log that came from just doing explicitly the sum over f. And this, then this f will be the f that appears for Ising model, where for us before, I remind you, this guy was just 2t sum of cosine of q mu. Right? And that's exactly what we did in the random walk. We just draw out how many paths there are with length L. Then we went to Fourier, we solved this. This guy was just something to the power L. And then we did a sum by putting a 1 over L, not to overcount where we start in the path, and that sum with 1 over L produced the log, and that was the solution. Okay? So that's what we want to do. Okay? Now this could be an exercise. Implement steps 1, 2, and 3. But it will be a tough problem because you would have to be careful and so on. Okay. So, let's do the first step. Let's do step 1 today, and we'll do step 2 and 3 tomorrow. Step 1 is the one which is kind of more interesting because it really shows in what sense I mean that this winding is local. So let's do step 1. Good. So how many paths there are of length L that end in position I and J? Going up, coming at I and J up, right? How many are there? So I'm saying that I am at position. Here is IJ, and I end up at IJ like this. So if I end up like this, where was I before? Right? I was at I, J minus 1, for sure, before, right? So here, I will say that this is equal to, well, I could be at step L minus 1 at I, J minus 1, right? And how did I get to J minus 1? How did I get to J minus 1 here? How did I get here to this position? There are three options. Because we cannot go back. We couldn't be here and came down, so we could have gone like this, or like this. There are these three options, right? So how many ways there are? I could be at position J minus 1, and perhaps I arrived there from the left. Plus, I could be at position L minus 1, at position J minus 1, and perhaps I got there coming up. Or I could be at position J minus 1, and I got there from the right. Plus, let's write it like this. I could be at position I, J minus 1, and I came there coming down. But this we know is not there, because we cannot go back, so that comes times 0. Right? Because we can't go up and down. Now, what weight should I put here? This is almost perfect, but it's not correct. This would be just the honest number without taking into account winding. Right? This is just the number ignoring winding. Now we have to put winding. Now, what happens up what weights would you put here, here, and here, multiplying these three numbers? That's the fun part where we put the winding here.
One by four?
Sorry?
Since you go left, so it's one step in the left direction.
Exactly. So the first step, let's see, the first step, we go like this, then we go up, we turn left. So here, I should put the factor, e, so we set the turning left, e to the I pi over 4. Right? Then automatically, this path is multiplied by the corresponding factor because it adds a turn, a left turn, right? This factor, this what I wrote here, is just minus 1 to the 1. Right? Quarter. What about the second line?
Zero.
Up, up, no factor, right? Just one. What about last line? So I go like this and like this, I turn right, it the minus I pi over 5. Right? Okay, so that's nice. So we have these weights. So we have a recursion relation that, as we promised, relates I and J with the neighbors. In this case, because we decided to come up, the neighbors are just J minus 1 everywhere, right? But if I decided to come down, then there it will be J plus 1 everywhere. And if I decide to come from this, then it will be there I minus 1 everywhere. And if I decide to come from this side, it will be there I plus 1 everywhere. So here we have I and J, and here we have a different I and J, depending on which case I choose here. And the idea is, if I go to Fourier, I diagonalize. It becomes the same momentum here, the same momentum there. So right now, we have an L, I, J are related to L minus 1 and I plus minus 1, J plus minus 1. And the idea is that when we go to Fourier, we have L and some momentum, 2 momentum Q, and that just comes from L minus 1 and the same momentum Q that is conserved, that's moment translation invariance. So we get rid of the fact that we have to change the positions, and in Fourier we trivialize this counting. And then we do the counting, and if we want to then undo by going back to position space, if you want. But in Fourier it's going to become trivial. Okay? But we did step one, right? I think maybe we can stop here and we can continue next time. Unless you want me to continue, but if you are tired, we can maybe, it's a long day. So we start tomorrow at 9 a.m. We take over from this. It's true, by the way. I don't know if it's 9 a.m. I know. It's a bit. It's, okay? Okay, cool. So see you tomorrow.